Browns Hoop and Dre.
It's the Fan Drive Time, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Ben Ennis and Stephen Brunt. How's it going, Stephen?
It's going well.
Happy Friday.
Happy Friday to you, sir.
Oh, yeah. Not a happy Friday for Toronto Maple Leafs fans because it's...
Sigh.
It's Panic City, I guess. Because their starts have been horrific. They were down 3-0 before you could turn on the game yesterday. They've scored one even-strength goal through two games. And now 50% of their goaltending tandem is out with injury. So that's not good.
I was driving home last night in the traffic schmozzle. You and I are both driving home.
Holy
and I
cow.
Listened. It's, you know, you can hear the sound of Joe Bowen's heart breaking sometimes. And it was in that last minute of the first period when they gave up the two goals. It is, I thought he was going to weep.
Yeah,
it was awful. I had, you know, I didn't. Then I saw it later on when I got home. I actually got to see the replay of those two spectacular goals. But yeah, that and then that Mrazek. There's a look sometimes to an injury, right? Where you go, he's not going to play for a while.
Yeah, when it's a groin injury, and your job as a professional athlete, as a goaltender in the National Hockey League, is to slide all over the place and maybe do the splits on occasion.
Groin stretching is your job, yes.
Yeah, it seems like a bad injury to have, and especially when you can just go back a season ago and look at Jack Campbell with a similar injury, missed about a month. That's the problem. When you're trying to patch over a starting goaltending issue in an 82-game season with a couple of guys who can maybe fill 50% of that void, when one of them goes down, we're looking at Michael Hutchinson land happening earlier than you would have ever anticipated.
Yeah, that's kind of beyond in case of emergency, break glass. He was held out of Marley's practice today.
Yeah,
two games into the season, though, I don't believe that was the best case. That was the best case scenario here.
No, it wasn't. We'll get back into that probably later on. Ron McLean going to join us in this first hour. More intriguing to me was, according to Vin Scully, the most important game ever played between the Dodgers and Giants. And those two teams have a storied history, not necessarily in California, but a storied history. And yesterday was the most important between them. They had both registered 109 wins on the season going into a Game 5 of an American League Division Series. The season series was 12-11 in favor of the Giants. Now it's 12-12. So really, they should be playing again today. They should be playing a game 6.
I wish.
It would be great. Let's just get it out of the way, because this is the thing that I've been thinking about, the thing that is still a conversation on Twitter. It's still a conversation in Major League Baseball circles, and it's a conversation we're going to continue with Joe Siddall later this hour as well. Do you know what the definition of a swing is in the Major League Baseball rule book?
Go ahead.
That's it. There isn't one.
Yes, it's...
There is no definition of what a swing is.
Yes, in the context of a check swing, right? This idea of when you have swung and when you have not. Something that has been a part of baseball since the beginning of time, right? Since the game has been played, the idea of what a check swing is or isn't has been part of baseball, and yet... Well, write the rule though. Like I'm not sure how you write the rule. It's kind of like, it's like one of those things that if you see it, you know what it is, right?
But well, that's the way they would like you to believe, right? I think there is a way to define it.
Okay.
And honestly, I'll just be straight up. I was shocked to find out that there is actually no definition of a swing, because the way I had defined a swing, and every time you see that side angle view, and you judge whether the first base or third base umpire was correct or incorrect, to me, it's been, has the bat crossed the parallel of the front of the plate? If it has, swing. If it hasn't, not a swing. I think generally most umpires do, whether it's not actually physically written in the rule book, go by that. That was in no way a swing, if that is your bar for whether it's a swing. But to your point, like, let's write something down.
Yes. Now... Like, and this is, you know, the welcome to the human element one more time. But it didn't decide. I know that the game could still be going on right now, right? In theory, because it's baseball, right?
Yes.
They could have tied it up, and they might still be playing in inning number 78 now or whatever it is. But, you know, they had two out, and it was 0-2, and Max Scherzer was pitching, and they did have a runner on first and all of that. But, it's a little less than, you know, a game decider, right? It's a blight on what was otherwise a brilliant, interesting baseball game and a brilliant, interesting baseball series. I'm still kind of getting over the fact that the Dodgers used two openers and then Urias and then used Scherzer to close.
Yeah.
Like, welcome to the 21st century, my friend.
And Scherzer's going to start in game one tomorrow, apparently.
Yeah. This, you know, so all those rules about the way what you could do, what you can't do, they all went out the window. It was brilliant. But it was, you know, it was an awesome series, great atmosphere. And yeah, it kind of left you with a bad taste in your mouth. And it's not, there's nothing like an umpire being not just wrong, but kind of aggressively wrong. Like, he didn't hesitate for a second before he made that call.
Honestly, that could have been Joe West. That felt like
young Joe West.
Yeah, and we're going to need a year of not having Joe West before we stop referencing Joe West, but he's still fresh in our memories after finishing up his Major League Baseball career in the National League wildcard game. But that, to me, was like the definition of an ump show. It's a call that, okay, in the middle of a game, in the fifth inning of a game in June, mm-hmm. between the Diamondbacks and the Rockies, do we notice it? Are we even that upset about it? Nah. But given the circumstances, given how close these two teams have been all season long, given that the momentum, I'll tell you, Justin Turner commits that error at third base and it's the bottom of the ninth inning and the crowd is going absolutely bananas, and Max Scherzer hasn't been the Max Scherzer that we've seen, well, the last month of the regular season for the Dodgers. He's looked a little bit fallible. It really, and I know the count was 0-2, I just felt like we were robbed of a moment. And whether it ends the same way or not, we'll never know. But it just, I wanted to see that thing played out. And instead, we got a Gabe Morales saying, maybe not even, he can't consciously come up with this in the moment, but you can't tell me that there isn't a part of him that's like, I get a chance to end this game, I'm going to take that thing.
I guess again, he did seem to kind of savor it, didn't he? Yeah, he did kind of, didn't he? He did. That's unfortunate.
Yeah.
You're right. Yeah. I get to end the most important game ever played between the Dodgers and the Giants with a dramatic gesture of my fist.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there was a little bit of that, a little bit of mustard on it for sure. But yeah, too bad. Because it was awesome. And it was awesome baseball. And it might be the best we get.
Yeah, it's to me, if you have a deciding game, that's the type of game I want. I want low scoring. I want a pitcher's duel.
Me too.
I don't think we're going to get much of that in the American League Championship Series because, I mean, the Astros just lost Lance McCullers Jr. for the entirety of this series.
Yeah, that's large.
Chris Sale is starting tonight, who, I don't know if people have paid attention, he has not been the Chris Sale of old the last couple of starts. I'm expecting those games to be very high scoring. I love the idea of just nip and tuck and stolen base, Mookie Betts getting into scoring position, and yeah, one mistake, one moment being the difference between those two and a well-played baseball game. Again, feel a little bit robbed, but here's where I'm feeling a little bit better about it, Steven. Honestly, I think the narrative surrounding the Dodgers is more fun.
Yeah, I guess so. I like that Giants team a lot, though. I really do. And I like, well, I like that ballpark. I like a lot of things about them. And we just saw the Dodgers win a World Series, so they're not the great but deprived Dodgers, right? They did just win. I know, with some asterisks attached last year, I guess, but they did just win one. You know, we could get a Dodgers-Astros rematch. That's got some juice.
Yeah, we could have.
I believe.
Yeah, we could have the Mookie Betts Bowl.
Yep.
Mookie Betts against his old team, the Boston Red Sox.
So there's still some stuff there. And, you know, we're kind of counting out Atlanta. I probably makes sense to count them out. But
even that series, it's a rematch of a seven-game series from a year ago in the National League Championship Series. The Braves and Dodgers, I know it's easy to forget because, well, you know, the Dodgers were the dominant storyline in what happened at the end, especially concerning Justin Turner. But that was a pretty good series between those two last year.
It was indeed. So it's much baseball will be played, and it's great. And we'll get over that. I think we'll get over it. Look who's here. Who's darkening our door.
Do I have to touch the mic, you guys, or is it Mike going to throw it on?
Apparently it just happened.
I can hear you.
I can hear you in my headphones.
So, yeah, good, Ben.
Yeah, this is a no-touch nice studio now. Yeah.
I have to say, Peter Mansbridge last night, Sid Sixero, and John Herdman. What a show last night. And
thanks.
Yeah,
thank
even
you.
All week long. But it was good to hear the new book discussion for you, Stephen. I always want to hear a blessing from Stephen Brunt is the one you want as an author.
It is a fun book. It really is a fun book.
I helped him with a liner. You know how you do.
Yeah.
So I got an advanced copy and loved it. Loved the, you know, I had no idea of the history of his you know, English roots in Malaysia, because he did the Commonwealth Games in Kuala Lumpur and Malaya, as it was called when he was a boy. Just some fascinating, you know, to shake hands with Diefenbaker at the age of five.
I love that stuff. I love that stuff. And I, you know, and I knew the story about the airport, the announcing job, which is still one of the greatest origin stories in the history of broadcasting, right? Who's that voice announcing those flights? Yeah, that's where it all started. But yeah, I think Pete doesn't need much help selling those books. They're selling really well. But
I think it's going to be all right.
We just gave him a bit.
It's amazing what a summer we've had with the Olympics and Fernandez at the U.S. Open and all the performances really at the tennis. But now, you know, back-to-back days to go from Alphonso Davies to this crazy call. 20/20 vision means you can see clearly at 20 feet, you know, which you should. 20/100 visions means you have to be at 20 feet to see what a person at 100 feet, you know, you have to be at 20 because you can't see what a normal person sees at 100 feet. And the thing that I think about in this whole debate about the bat, was it across the middle of the plate, and the fact that there's no rule, is I've always found it odd that an umpire 100 feet away, you know, with a bit of an angle, is being asked to make this determination. Because the hosel of the bat, or the barrel, I should say, you know, from the perspective of 100 feet and coming at you, I don't see how he could possibly make that call. Right. So it always was a mystery to me to begin with. And unfortunate.
But it's been, you're right, it's been a heck of a week, hasn't it? Like, this is an eventful week. It's great for us.
I just feel like the year has, Stephen. You know,
yeah, you might be right.
Pandemic and all, you know, we had the return of the fans, and that's a much ballyhooed thing. But I think of the Ryder Cup, and just to see, you know, a guy drive the green, you know, on the first hole of the final Sunday and take his putter in the air, and just all kinds of stuff has been, for me, monumental this summer. And now hockey.
Now you're back to work.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, Rogers Hometown Hockey does return. Of course, we're talking to Ron McLean here. Monday in North Dumfries, as the Rangers are in town to play the Toronto Maple Leafs after, obviously, an insane year. Everybody, everywhere, taking a year off from this program. What does it mean to return to this thing, Ron?
Well, it's just, you know, I always remember Ben as a boy. You and I are Oakvillians now, and I live just down the road from Stephen, not to be stalking the two of you, but when I was in Ancaster, I was just up the hill from Stephen. Anyway, I was in Whitehorse, Yukon as a boy. My father was stationed there in the Air Force, and Bobby Hull came to visit. And I'm not comparing us to Bobby Hull, but we certainly bring to the show on Monday in Air hometown heroes. Kyle Clifford is now with the St. Louis Blues. He'll join us via Zoom, and so will Jay Wells. You know, just we're still working through some of the logistics of making it safe for everybody in sight. But there's two Stanley Cup champions from the North Dumfries area, for those who don't know, is essentially just west of Cambridge and a little bit north of Paris, Ontario. And it's Ayr, kind of the hub community, is as pretty as any town in the world. It's just unbelievable. Watson Pond, Centennial Park, Jigs McDonald, great broadcaster from there. And he's going to open us up with an essay. And yeah, it's a nice thing. Back to Bobby Hull. What an impression he made on me as a youngster. He made the NHL a firsthand experience, because it had never been anything close to that living in Whitehorse. And that's what Rogers Hometown Hockey does, is it makes it a firsthand experience.
So I was going to ask you, where in North Dumfries? Now I know it's going to be Ayr, which is a big fastball town, by the way. That's that part of the world, right?
I didn't know that. Yeah. So there you go, Stephen. I know that the hockey sticks, you know, Hespeler, kind of the roots of it are back in Ayr when they had an agricultural manufacturing. Plow 21 was built in Ayr. It was iconic in the early part of the 1900s. And they switched to making hockey sticks and really good ones out of elm. And it's got a lot of little great designations and a fantastic junior B team now at the Centennials.
Well, that's going to be great. So I, you know, like, I know what the road show looked like before, the great dividing point in all of our lives.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, I'm lucky enough to be on the road with you a few times, Ron. What's it like now? Like, what's hometown hockey look like now that it's returning?
First big change is we're moving to Monday nights.
Yeah, it's a huge change. Yeah.
You know, because we couldn't get the Canadian teams. They all play Saturday night for hockey night. And then if we did get them, they were in the second of a back-to-back, and you saw how Toronto played last night in Ottawa.
Right.
So it doesn't really bode well for the show to have no Canadian teams or tired Canadian teams. And this gives us great matchups. I think we have like 8 Toronto Maple Leaf telecasts, and you know how it goes, the ratings kind of follow them.
Yep.
So that's great for the show. The festival will run Saturday, Sunday, and you'll have all the usual criteria nowadays, double vaxxed, mask proof of everything, and you know, a limited number on site. You got to go to the hometownhockey.com website to get all the details. But from a show point of view, that festival kind of packs up Sunday night, and we're left in town on Monday, which is a great, for me, I don't know how you two feel, but I always liked, Sunday nights are kind of busy. I was either playing sports or visiting family or entertaining family, and I still gathered around the TV Sunday night, like any sports fan does. But Monday night was the self-care night. It was the night where you kind of had your ducks in a row, either in school or in work. You knew now where you stood, and you could kind of enjoy the sport without all the, you know, fuss of a weekend. So I'm kind of grateful for, because of our ethos, which is kind of a kids or family show, I think Monday night is a, maybe I'm, you know, rationalizing for the sake of the show. But
no, it makes a lot of sense. You know, logistically for yourself to turn around.
For sure.
Sunday was pretty extreme. Getting the extra buffer day there must be a little easier.
I'm not sure it's good because I think in my fatigue, maybe I allowed Tara to take control. And, you know, it was good for the viewer. But because I was definitely punchy. You know, there's a lot of shows where I was on 2 hours sleep. And when you're giddy and punchy, you talk too much and your filter isn't too good. But, I mean, it worked. Blessedly, we got through 6 years incredibly, you know, flying every night through the winter and not missing a show is crazy.
What? Yeah. Is it going to be emotional for you to return? Because we've had so many emotional returns in sports, right? Seeing fans in the buildings. And
I wonder. I don't think I'm just too old, Ben. I don't know that I'm jaded at all, and I'm certainly not. But everything feels kind of like it should. It's definitely always a riding the bike experience. Like, we're just moving into our new studios, and we've been shooting a few things in there, and everybody says, must feel strange, Ron, to move from the CBC building. No, I mean, it's just me and the viewer. It's me and a camera and a viewer, nothing more. So I think once you're in mode, you know, a concentration mode, and you've been there, all that other stuff kind of falls off by the wayside. I will say, though, that, I mean, these guests that we're having, Kyle Clifford, and we have a young hockey player, Taylor Trussler, is a woman who won the ESO Cup, and to see the kids come in and do the three stars, and I won't bore you with a long story, but one of them, Wibbs, is connected to a connection, and that's how it goes in a small town, right? Mm-hmm. That part will just feel great. It'll be like my beer league hockey, so excited for that.
So, and I see, so I think you've announced the schedule for about the first month, right?
Yeah,
and
five
then,
stops.
And because we're all kind of waiting to see how the world unfolds, I guess that's part of it, but is... are you going to be able to fan out? Are you hoping to be able to fan
out
across the country?
And we have really, if, you know, we're lucky, we have an incredible tour, you know, with Newfoundland. I just can't say where we're going to end up in Newfoundland. It's not in your home.
Well, I was going to say,
it won't be Woody Point.
Won't be Woody Point. We're ready. We're available.
Yeah. You know? I know. I'd love to go there.
We could throw it together for you.
But it's equally exciting destination in Newfoundland.
Oh, fantastic.
If all works out. And coast to coast, you know, the island and Vancouver Island and so forth. So I can't wait. You know, you've been there. It's the essence of everything on Hockey Night in Canada has to start somewhere, and it starts where we show on Mondays.
Yeah, and first one is, again, North Dumfries on Monday. Rangers and the Toronto Maple Leafs in studio, actually seeing Tara Sloan face-to-face when we return to broadcasting hockey on Saturday night, face-to-face. Are you happy to never have to do those virtual broadcasts ever again, Ron?
Yeah, it was a challenge, right? People were putting their hand in the air in order to speak. It was a Zoom call approach to broadcasting. So yeah, the intimacy that you can't replace eye contact. It's everything. You know, that knowledge that somebody's got something in their head and they can't wait to get going, that's beautiful, and it'll be a big part of what happens for us. And even on Saturday night with Hockey Night in Canada, I can't wait to have everybody to have our host Kevin Bieksa, you know, actually in the studio.
Is that good? Yeah, I saw him there. I realized that we all learn how to do stuff, right? That's the kind of positive spin. We all learn how to do things in different ways. I'm now trying to unlearn all of that, right? Like we're in a studio doing a radio show. You know, we're not locked in our basements or our attics or somewhere. We're you know, and it does make a difference. It makes a huge difference to have human contact. And I was thinking, like, doing a panel like you guys did, it was great that we could pull it off. And Bieksa lives across the continent and all that stuff. It was amazing that you guys could do it. But there's nothing like just being able to look at somebody and look somebody in the eye when they say something and say, well, what do you mean? Or give them some kind of a cue.
Like, as an example, the other night they were just doing the wrap from the Wednesday night of hockey, and Kevin starts with a stat that he suddenly realizes he's stolen from Carolyn Cameron. He thinks he's created it, and then he realizes, oh, no, wait a minute. Somebody else just mentioned this, and I'm stealing it from. And he looked at the panel, and he realized in the eyes of, you know, the hatred in Carolyn. I'm kidding. But, you know, he just realized that it was Carolyn. And that's the magic, right? The companionship is for sure a big part of what makes it all fly.
So the Leafs play the Senators again on Saturday, and then first game outside of playing a Canadian team.
Yeah.
So that's going to be emotional. Non-Senators, Canadians, like the Monday night, a historic game for the Toronto Maple Leafs as they finally get out of the Canadian bubble that they've been in for the last 2 years.
One little aside, you were talking about the Mrazek injury, a groin. Johnny Bower in the 67 Stanley Cup pulled his groin in game 3. You know how Kelly, I don't know if you know this, but Kelly Rudy just has a fit every time a guy has a groin strain. Your job, you're a professional athlete. Your job is to have, you know, flexibility and to be prepared and to stretch. But Bauer and then Sochuk came in and played game four and they lost. And they all thought, you know, it was gambling. They all thought that there was some kind of a gambling mob thing happening, that that's the reason Bauer withdrew and that Sochuk gave up all these goals. Crazy stuff back in 67.
But they pulled it together.
But they pulled it together.
I think they won. I'm trying to remember. Did they win that in 67?
Yeah, they did. As I recall.
No one talks about that one much anymore.
Well, and as you know, and everybody's been talking about it, there's no sense discussing Monday night or Saturday night because we only want to talk about April, whatever. I don't know when the playoffs begin, but game 83 is the one we're all discussing at nauseam.
I get that. I mean, what is your feeling surrounding this team going into this season? Because it is so bizarre, because they'll be judged harshly. And I think there's some hard conversations after the performance yesterday, and it's game two, but it is only going to come down to what they can do in April.
I agree, Ben. For sure, tomorrow night on Hockey Night, I think, you know, what we want to do with the panel, you know, everything changes on the fly. But I want to show Sheldon Keefe addressing the team in pressure moments last year, and I want to show Dave Tippett in preseason addressing his Oilers. Mm-hmm. Two teams loaded with that 1-2 punch of Draisaitl, McDavid, or Matthews, Marner. And you could include, of course, Nylander and Tavares. But what are they going to do? How are they going to get over that sort of emotional or mental roadblock that they seem to have found, and what is going to push them through? And with Toronto, you're always looking for, you know, here's an opportunity. Like last night, they came within one, but they need to win some of those. You know, you need to have a game you are out of and you rally and win, like Canada did against Panama, like the Canadian women's hockey team did in 2014 and did at the World Championship in August in Calgary, and like Paul Henderson's team and Mario Lemieux's teams. Canada Cup Summit Series. You got to do that. That is how you become the winner, is to start to face these crazy things and win. So we'll watch for that.
Yeah, because it's, look, we've been talking about this, that the you know, when we last saw them playing in, you know, then in the non, in the, with the rest of the National Hockey League, not in the Scotia North Division, you know, they were life and death to make the playoffs, right? They weren't going to make the playoffs necessarily that year. They ended up in that series against Columbus. They lost that series, but like I know, I think they're a playoff team. But I don't think it's a cakewalk run.
No, it's definitely not. Because if Ottawa's building the way they appear to be, you obviously have Florida as a cup favorite and Tampa. You know, you've got Boston's relentlessly and endlessly there. So, no, it's not a gimme at all. They've got to, and that's a new pressure, and one that they'll have to, you know, endure, is that you got to get to the playoffs. And it won't take very long for us to start piling on.
Oh, yeah.
Nope.
And they're piling on already in Montreal, obviously, after a couple of losses.
Well, that's it. That one, you know, and even when Toronto lost, again, you hate to make excuses, but the Tavares thing was a big hole in their lineup last spring. Montreal's decimated. There's no way, you know, you just can't pull the leadership core out the way they've had to pull it out there. And everything, their number one defensive center, their goalie, their top defenseman. They essence of Montreal is defense, and the three leaders of that are gone. So they're going to need to, you know, find a way to put a Band-Aid on it, but it won't be easy.
No, it won't. Yeah, when you lose a couple of future Hall of Famers, probably in Carey Price and Shea Weber. Rogers Hometown Hockey returns on Monday. North Dumfries, the citizens of North Dumfries already know that because they're preparing. They're ready to go. The Toronto Maple Leafs against the New York Rangers in the first game outside of the Canadian division, outside of a Canadian team. On Sportsnet. Ron, thanks for doing this.
Yeah.
And it's good to have this thing back, man.
Yeah. I'll be back in Oakville and I'll say hi to your family.
Yeah, I would love that.
Okay. See you, Steven.
See you down the road, Ron.
There's Ron McLean. When we come back, we're going to talk to Joe Siddall as the Fan Drive Time continues. Ben Ennis, Steven Braun, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Our next guest, when we talk to Amy Trask over the phone, I'm getting used to this in-studio thing. I like it a lot. It's been a while since I've talked to Joe Siddall in person. And here he is on the Fan Drive Time. Ben Ennis and Stephen Brunt, co-host of Blue Jays Central, Baseball Central. How's it going, man?
Fantastic. Good to see you in person. person.
See, this
guys.
Isn't great. We get a little catering going on here, Mike. Maybe this is the, you know, like we can get all kinds of people coming in here, right? 5 to 7, it's a nice time, kind of cocktail hour, right?
You're absolutely right. Yeah, a couple of cocktails would be very nice.
Cocktail hours.
Yes, that's right. Hours, yes.
Let's talk a little bit about the game last night. Did you know that there was actually no definition of a swing in the Major League Baseball rulebook? Because hand up, like I thought there would be at least some indication as to what the umpire is supposed to go on, whether it's the plane of the home plate, whether it's breaking, whether it's something, that there's actually nothing in the rulebook that tells you what a swing is mind-boggling to me.
Over all these years, I always thought, and I thought I had heard it even from umpires, that, and it was almost mocked, that the definition was an attempt to swing at a pitch. Well, my argument was always a hitter attempts to swing at every pitch.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Now, how far the bat goes is another question, but yeah, it was a very unfortunate way to end things.
It was too bad, because it was such a great game and a great series, you know, fascinating series. Like, I was thinking about, we were talking about this earlier, that, you know, welcome to the 21st century, that the Dodgers roll out two openers and then their best starter and close with Max Scherzer.
Yeah.
Right? But if you like baseball, like there's so many talking points. It was so beautifully played. I just thought, I wish it was best of 7. I wish the game was still going.
Yeah, the best part of it was for us.
Yeah.
Because you're talking about talking points. Oh, yes. Like, absolutely. You're thinking, okay, what's Kapler doing in San Francisco now? Why is Roberts doing this? And I'm going over all this in my head before I even came to work yesterday, because it just broke late afternoon. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking, well, he's going to start righties because San Francisco's pretty balanced. And that's one of their things. They're kind of like Tampa Bay. We mm-hmm. see a lot of the Rays and you got a lot of lefties, a lot of righties. They get their platoon advantages and that's how they roll. And it's worked very well for them. So I'm thinking, I'm looking at their lefties on the bench. Once their lineup finally did come out, Kapler went with 3 lefties compared to just Crawford, the one lefty the last time Urias started. So with the righty, he's got some lefties. But I thought, sure, he'll go righty. And then if we see Urias, we'll see. And I bet Kapler will go ahead and pinch hit early. And I think that's what the Dodgers are trying to get him to do. So all this was going on. It was great. It was great theater. And I think in the end, ultimately, I think Gabe Kapler wanted a left-handed bat or two, and of course Wade has been his key guy. You want that left-handed bat because the Dodgers got all the right-handed big boys at the back end. Whether it was going to be Gratterall or Kelly or Trinan or Jansen, that's the matchup he was wanting. He got it, but it was against Scherzer, but yes. Still he got what he wanted. And I think really things worked out the way they probably should have. But yeah, great game. Great game.
Yeah. We needed late night Lamont to come through there. Shocking. I was shocked that, well, yeah, he turned on one that foul ball was needed to straighten that thing out a little bit. But that guy has been Mr. Clutch all season long for the Giants, who, I mean, you look at the two rosters and you look at the payrolls of these two teams, it really didn't make a whole lot of sense that one was 107, one was 106. The 106 made a lot of sense, but the 107 that the Giants were able to trot out this season, it just felt like that's part of the reason why I'm so upset with the way that game ended, because it felt like there was something magical about this Giants team. Turner drops the ball at third base. Lamont didn't come through there, but the idea of a walk-off two-run home run, even being down 0-2 to Max Scherzer, the way this season went for the Giants, it almost felt like the storybook was going to conclude in that moment.
Yeah, and only Max Scherzer goes inside like that, and Wade turns on it. Might have got jammed a little bit, whatever. He was in there pretty good. He came back with it. He came back with the heater in there. I mean, I just love that. To me, is theater, because I'm always looking at pitch sequences and what he's going to do. I thought that next pitch, and I was saying to Jamie in studio, he's going soft away here. He sped the bat up. Now he's going to go like that backdoor breaking ball or whatever. He ended up doing 2 pitches later. Mm-hmm. Wasn't a real good one, but sometimes that old backup breaker is the best pitch in baseball, and it was. But yeah, Gabe was a teammate of mine in Detroit, Kapler, and he's a great mind. He's an intellect. He's a bright, bright guy, and we know it didn't go well in Philly. But he's an analytical mind, and he's right into all that. And
you can tell because he wears the glasses. Yes. He wears the glasses, so you can tell that he's smart.
Plays the part.
Yeah,
but they've done a nice job.
The fact that he wasn't a fit in Philly is starting to look like maybe that was Philly's fault.
Well, isn't that how many times have we seen managers?
Yeah.
Mike Schilt just got fired. Wasn't he manager of the year?
I'm still trying. Not to interrupt, but do you have a clue? Like the only how he gets fired after that season?
Philosophical differences to me are we are going the more analytical route. That's what baseball is in 2021. And Mike seems like an old school guy that maybe isn't biting on all that. And if you're not going to play out our philosophy, then you can't be here. That's the only thing I can think of. Now, I can't wait to hear maybe some inner workings.
I heard that, Joe, and I heard people say that, and I just thought, well, but even the, like, you know, there's not many old school guys now who have the power to say, no, I'm not going to listen to this
That's
stuff.
That's right.
Everybody else is kind of saying, well, you know, yeah, I'll build this into what I do, right. And I'm going to listen. And I, you know, it would be hard to imagine him kind of taking a stand saying, no, I won't talk to them. And by the same token, it's hard to imagine the team saying, after that season, saying, man, we got a real problem here. You know, we're going to force the issue. I'm baffled. I guess I'm just baffled by it.
And to what degree, I guess it is too. So if you're going to execute that plan of the general manager and how we want to do things here, do they give you suggestions on what the starting lineup's going to be? Mm-hmm. Do they give suggestions on all the pitching matchups and what relievers to use in what situations? And the final say is yours, or is the final say yours? We talk about that here in Toronto all the time. Nobody really gets the right answer. But how much is the lineup made out for Charlie, or is it suggested and he gets the final say? I mean, let's go back a little bit. I remember it was a couple years ago, Danny Jansen batting third when he was hitting .140 or something. Teoscar was dropped eighth in that. Now, I know Charlie pretty well as a baseball guy. He would never do that. Mm. So
yeah, I think there's some there.
Sure, but there's a blend there.
But the other thing is the Chilton organization guy. He's an art guy, right? He's been there forever.
Yeah.
Like, so it's not like he's coming from some alien culture and saying, boy, I don't like the way you guys operate here. He's one of them.
Yeah.
So yeah, anyway, strange. That's just, you know, I'm sure we'll talk when he gets his next gig. But it was an odd one.
I assume all the old school guys, like the Dusty Bakers and the Tony La Russas, while they have their old school component to it, they're not, you think the Astros are going away from analytics because Dusty Baker's their manager?
No way.
Yeah. What's the over-under on game time tonight? Because I feel like every single one of these things is going to be 7 hours long because there's no Lance McCullers Jr. anymore.
Yeah, I was just going to say, there's no Logan Webb pitching for one of the teams. How great was he? But yeah, this has got bullpen written all over it, doesn't it? Even with like Framber Valdez, good pitcher, and you might even get a good one out of Chris Sale, but still, what's a good one? Is it going to be five and out, isn't it? Probably anymore. That's what we, right? Five innings, one run, you get high fives and pats on the back. Now, so that's just the way the game is. And then they parade the bullpens out. Now, hey, Boston's bullpen has really surprised me. I thought that was going to be their biggest problem, but it's not over yet, right? On to the next series. So, yeah, they could be moving. Now, unless Corey uses his guys like he did last series, you know, Pivetta and Houck, these guys that worked like a lot of bulk innings, then that changes things.
Seven-game series is a little different than five, though, right?
Like yes.
It was also curious that they went to Sale tonight instead of Evaldi. What did you make of that decision?
Well, the only thing I can make of it is that, it was Evaldi's day, but right now in game one, the pen is rested and ready because of time off, and maybe that's what they'll need in support of Sale more so than Evaldi, but still hard not to go with your big guy number one game one,
especially given that and Sale has not looked like if you'd asked me 24 hours ago, I would said that I thought Houston was going to roll him, but McCullers being out of there, that changes that conversation.
It's huge because when you look at their starters and, you know, Valdez tonight, and now what are you going to see? Greinke start a game? You're going to see that Christian Javier start a game? You know that Luis García was not great. So, becomes bullpen game. And, man, that wasn't Houston's strength necessarily either. They've got some guys, you know, with Graveman down there and Presley. And they've got some, the Maton, they've got some guys. But it's still not their strength. And these are good hitting teams. I mean, Houston's a really good hitting team. Boston's on a great roll right now. But these are two good hitting teams that I could see some bullpens getting beat up and this thing going seven.
Well, yeah, and especially, you got the Crawford boxes in Houston, and you got Fenway Park where all kinds of madness can happen. I mean, the McCullers injury feels so, so massive because that was the advantage that Houston was supposed to have, right? They've got this one starter that is, and I know Evaldi's shown that at times, and you know what? Sale was pretty good when he came off the Tommy John started this year. But you do you see that sometimes, guys that come off the Tommy John, like it's a little uneven, like they show flashes of themselves, but then
hit that wall maybe.
They revert a little bit. I'd be very nervous if I was a Red Sox fan going into tonight and what Sale could offer you considering the last couple of starts.
Yeah, I would too. I did read, I think Corey had talked about him working on his fastball and changeup command, whatever the case may be, but he is still Chris Sale. Like, and again, could you see him going five, one run? I could. Mm-hmm. Could you see him getting blown up in two and a third? I could too. So you just don't know what you're going to get from him. And that's the problem, right? And if you're Cora, I think that's why it's Chris Sale tonight, because he's got a full bullpen. Like, he's got lots of arms down there and he's got guys that can go multiple innings. And that's huge. And as you said, in a seven-game series, so you're not burying your bullpen in game one.
Do you think Atlanta can push the Dodgers at all? Like, it's amazing what they've, like, I think it's amazing what they've done with the injuries. I thought, you know, we had Alex on the other day. I thought it was a bold move to ad when they did after Acuna was hurt and they were kind of scuffling. And, you know, they helped the fact that National League East was garbage. But
yeah.
But I have a hard time seeing them hanging in with the Dodgers team.
I thought regardless whether it was the Giants or Dodgers, they're going to the World Series.
Yeah.
And I think the Dodgers will go to the World Series. But, hey, that's why you play the games. We've seen some great ones, and I hope Alex's group can get it together and make it a series.
Yeah, and especially if Cody Bellinger has figured out how to hit again. I know it's just one hit. I understand it. But this is a guy that's won an MVP.
Right.
And it feels like, I know injuries were a big part of his season as well,
but
he was almost at like an offensive zero coming into the postseason. Maybe that jumpstarts him a little bit.
So hard to believe, eh? Cody Bellinger. Hard to believe we're talking about Cody Bellinger as an offensive zero. Yeah. Yeah, big AB for him. And it can, you know, one hit. The mental part of it is huge, but at the same time, it doesn't necessarily fix your mechanics. I thought they just did him a huge favor. It was about the only pitch he could hit, I think. And he threw him four sliders down the zone. Like, it's just, I didn't get the game calling, especially with a guy like Posey back there. I've complimented Posey. I'm a big fan of what he has done with this, especially the way he's handled Logan Webb this year. And and to do that, I thought that was playing right into Bellinger's hands. He's got that loopy swing.
He's had trouble with velocity, apparently, has been his problem this season. Yeah, to go to the breaking ball there.
Even if you show up there and come back and bury a slider or bury it in the dirt, right?
Yeah.
And maybe he was trying to, but that sequence was not good.
Yeah, I'm with you in thinking that yesterday was at least deciding the World Series participant in the National League. Whoever it was going to, I think, beat the Braves. Maybe it's not going to be a short series, and it was seven games just a year ago. What is your, like, if you're envisioning your dream matchup in the World Series, I imagine it's the Dodgers because there's so many great storylines surrounding them and, you know, trying to go back to back. Like, what storyline interests you more? Is it the rematch of 2017 and all that encompasses that? Is it the Mookie Betts thing? Because I think that'll be the headline. I think if you're, who has the World Series? ESPN? I think they'll be rooting for, obviously, that market, the Red Sox and the storylines of Mookie Betts against his old team, Red Sox Dodgers. Is that the one for you?
I don't know about that even. Like, So I'm torn because the Astros are the Astros and they're forever tainted. But for me, I love Dusty and I love that he is really...
Let's not forget that the Red Sox the next year had their own scandal.
And Mr. Cora is managing the Red Sox now, and trouble has followed him.
He did get suspended, yes.
I mean, I just don't have a whole lot of respect for that. And maybe I'm not a forgiving person. I'm not a very nice person, I guess. But, the Astros and Red Sox, either way, it's just kind of like, you know? And then the Dodgers, I mean, my goodness, they've got, like, relievers making $8 million a year and bench players. Yeah. So I really would have liked to see the Giants just because I don't know if that was a special season for the Giants or they're going to be really good moving forward. It's hard to say. Hopefully they are going to be, and this wasn't an aberration, but what a season. That would have been a great story. That would have been a more fun story to follow going into the World Series. So to answer your question, it's like I'm just grimacing going, I don't really care, you know. I got my issues with
a lot of Jays fans too. Especially the Red Sox. I think Jays fans generally would rather the Red Sox lose in four here to the Houston Astros. Even with the cheating stuff in 2017.
I have been a big fan of Dusty Baker his entire career, and I'd love to see him win the big one.
Yeah.
So even though it's Houston, still big fan of Dusty.
Find your rooting interest where you can.
It's hard.
I know.
Hard
sometimes you got to dig a little bit, right? At least you can find villains. There's lots of bad guys.
Oh, there are a lot of villains.
Yes. Oh, that's
easy. He'll be on TV tonight.
So that's good. We're entering the off season for the local heroes. Obviously, the business part of the off season is going to start pretty soon. I would expect that offers are going to be tabled for the three big for Ray and Matts and. Simeon. And I expect they'll all three will reject those offers because they're going to go to market. Qualifying offers are going to follow. I wonder, Joe, though, like with, you know, and I've been trying not to think about it, but you know, the labor situation, like this market may only be open for a month before things shut down.
Really interesting to see how that's going to play out. And I don't know that, you wonder, are teams directed and how they're going about this, because what if you start business and then all of a sudden it stops in December because the CBA is expired and there's nothing new coming? That's a very interesting question, but let's just say the CBA works out and we move forward with baseball. I don't know Marcus Simeon.
And we've all heard he's a West Coast guy and he wants to, but I mean, there are a lot of other teams that could use him too. And mm-hmm. they could be on the East Coast.
Yeah. So one of them could play at Yankee Stadium.
One of them could play at Yankee Stadium. Right. So, I mean, I think we all know where free agents usually go. And you know, I know family and homes matter, but money matters a lot more too. So that'll be interesting. And then with Ray, I mean, hey, he has made a wonderful bed for himself. And yeah. I'm sure he's very grateful to the Blue Jays and to Pete Walker and the pitching people for helping him along. But I think those friendships, they don't go by the wayside, but there are other things that are important now when you're looking to cash in. So, yeah, and I'm not sure if I would go that far with Robbie Ray. That kind of scares me a little bit. I will say, as I'm a big fan of starting pitching. I think that's how you want to build. And but man, max effort guy, two pitch, that stuff scares me. I don't know that he can repeat.
I'd be throwing money in term at Jose Berríos is what I'd be doing.
Oh, I hope so. Yeah, that to me is a given.
I think that would be priority one.
Love to see him be on next year.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear you say that about Ray because, yeah, he's a two-pitch guy, and he threw the ball in the zone a lot this year, which was great. The results were spectacular. Gave up a lot of home runs. And then at the end of the season, when teams were able to lay off the slider seemingly, things got a little bit more difficult for him.
Or if that velo ticked down a hair, all of a sudden they're getting foul tips and longer at bats and he wasn't going as deep. And that's the stuff that it's like, if he's that reliant on that power fastball and power slider, what if you lose a little bit of that power in the next year or two and you sign him to 4 or 5? Yeah. So that's the one that's scary for me.
Yeah.
Love to have him back next year. That's sure. for sure. I mean, what a rotation. You think of, and that's, I hate to keep thinking back, but think of this postseason that we're watching right now, especially even in the first rounds there. I mean, the Blue Jays fit right in here. They could beat any of these teams.
Yep. Yeah.
And I start with the rotation. I mean, can you imagine throwing out Ray, Berríos, Manoah, and then you've got Mats and or Ryu fourth? I mean, that's a pretty nice gig right there. Bullpen could have some issues, but as we see, look at the teams we're talking about tonight. Bullpen's got issues. Ray, it's not easy.
No, the Red Sox have an all-star closer, Matt Barnes, who hasn't closed a game in like weeks.
I didn't see his name on the roster.
No, he's not. Yeah, he's off the roster.
I think Houck will be the closer.
Yeah, he's on the taxi squad for this round.
It's unbelievable. Well, now that we're here talking about bullpens, there was also this report that Craig Kimbrell, the White Sox are going to look to move him. So they have an option on him at $16 million. They brought him over not to be the closer because they addressed that spot in the offseason, throwing out the big deal. And he really did not perform well in that eighth inning role. I don't know if the Blue Jays are necessarily looking for a closer at this moment. Jordan Romano really took to that job. But I don't know. If you're bringing in a guy that could be as good as Craig Kimbrell was before he arrived in Chicago, yeah.
I bet Jordan would be good in the eighth.
He'd be all right.
And Matt's in the seventh.
Yeah, but you know, but Kimbrell was good, but then he was bad before that, right? Like what is he, three bad and one good over the last four seasons, or two? He's definitely two bad and one good, right?
But we talk about those 1 year deals never being a bad one, and of course it would have to be a trade. But I imagine the White Sox aren't going to be looking for much if you eat all the money.
Eat some money, don't get a whole lot in return. 1 year deal, I'd be all for it. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Just because of who he is. Again, it's almost like we're talking about Sale tonight. You never know. If you get the good Chris Sale, that's a great start.
Well, and I just wonder how this team goes about building that bullpen, because it was the thing that kept them out of the postseason. Any team can talk about blown saves, but it was just so bad early on.
And you got to be careful moving forward, because I don't know that you can just assume. Are we going to assume Richards and Simber are going to be great next year? I mean, you talk about bullpens being fickle. When I think of those two guys.
Yeah. No, there's volatility for sure.
Seriously volatile. Yeah. So, and even Mesa, you know, 1 year after the surgery, certainly look at. I mean, there's so many things. My point is, it's hard to find those relievers that are great year in and year out. So those things are, I think those are just moving parts that you kind of keep. You try to start the season solidly, but be ready to keep moving because you just don't know.
I kind of think Nate Pearson's name is, in one way or another, I think, you know, in some kind of a hybrid role, but I think his name's going to be part of
definitely
that
in the big leagues, like more AAA stuff, like in the big leagues. But man, I still like to see him try to start.
I just don't know how you get to that point where I think you're going to have to kind of mess around with it a little bit to get him through the season next year if he's healthy, right?
It is. It's so tough, the travels he's had and the injuries that set him back, and then he's pitching, you know, the smaller workloads. And this is another conversation for another day, but this is what I mean about developing starting pitchers. Like, that to me should be the first and foremost, first important thing in an organization. And we hear so much around the game now where they're watching their workloads in the minor leagues. And, you know, we heard the piggybacking back in the day. They're like, all this protection. Well, somebody help me, but I think there are more injuries in baseball than ever before, yeah. Right? Like, it's just, yeah. And you need to, when you're developing in the minor leagues, that's what developing is. It's developing those four pitches. But now you bring him to the big leagues and he's throwing two pitches. Mm-hmm. So now he's a reliever.
It looked easy with Manoah.
Yeah.
Didn't it?
Yeah.
Didn't yeah, but he's a different breed.
Yeah, he's a different, but very fast track, college guy.
Yeah.
Ready, durable, it would mm-hmm. appear, and no real hiccups.
I could see him pitching tonight, couldn't you?
Oh yeah,
absolutely.
I would have
like and thriving him the in ball the environment
with no problem. Yeah. I mean, I might have handed him the ball first.
Yeah, and that's what I mean about the rotation. Yeah, so close.
I want to get your take on the catching situation before we wrap up with you, because Danny Jansen was supposed to be this offensive catcher when he arrived, and I think in his brief first whatever September call up, he hit the ball pretty well throughout his minor league career. He hit the ball very well, and then he dedicated himself to improving his defense. Turned himself into a pretty good defensive catcher. The idea of him still being something offensively is not out of the realm of possibility. And you hear him talk about what the offensive strides he made late in the season, about changing his mindset, thinking more about pull, thinking more about power. Alejandro Kirk, I guess, is the wild card, and Gabriel Moreno, who's probably his ETA is probably not 2022. What do you think the Blue Jays should do behind the plate?
It's not a priority. I like when you look around the playoffs, the guys that you're seeing in the Martin Maldonados and the Christian Vasquez. Will Smith's not an older veteran type guy, but he's won a World Series because he's with the Dodgers. But some of the catchers you're seeing around Grandal in Chicago, again, not a great catcher, but it's just that experience. And I've always been a fan of that back there because, and I, you know, you go back to last night, Posey.
Yeah.
Not that I didn't like the way he handled that one at bat, but to Bellinger. But I mean, those kinds of people behind the plate to guide the staff, because I think calling a game is still, as much as we say they've got the wristbands and everything, they are still executing game plans and calling a game, you know, and reading bats and doing all those things. Now, it's hard to gauge all that throughout the course of a game, but I'm just not sold on Danny's bat yet. But you don't have to be sold on that bat either, right? Because if he could be Mike Zunino and
yeah.
hit 200, but hit 20, 25 homers and do a good job behind the plate, that's, I think there are way bigger issues on the team. I still like that, but you know, honestly, there are not a lot of those guys in the game anymore. Those kind of good veteran game calling experience guys. Mm-hmm. So I could say, yeah, I'd like a guy like that, but I can't name one really where you'd go to find that. So it's tough. So you work with Danny and try to make it work. And I could get into a long technical thing about his swing. I'm not crazy about his swing. Yeah. He feels that if he could just rush it out there and get dead pull and run into 15 or 20, that's fine. He might be able to do that. He might be able to do that, but I think there are a lot of holes in that swing. And again, he was hot there for a little while, but over the course of a season, when teams are game planning more against you, we saw what he was doing earlier and it wasn't very good.
No.
So in answer to your question again, do you go out and get a catcher? Well, I don't think that's the priority, right? There's so many other things.
Yeah, they're okay, I think, would be, yeah. Like, one of those guys probably emerges, right? I don't know if you want Alejandro Kirk catching 90 times a year either, though.
Yeah, I think Danny emerges as the main guy. And if you got Kirk's bat in there 2 or 3 days a week, but yeah, not ideal.
And then you're waiting on Moreno.
Yeah, well, for sure.
Yeah.
From what I hear, I've never seen the kid play, but we're hearing great things, right?
Yeah, and he's going to play in the Arizona Fall League. It's going to be just an exciting time come February and March for this team.
Well, next year it's about winning, right? Like,
not winning,
but like going and going deep in the playoffs. Like, this isn't about just sneaking in a playoff wild card anymore. Like, this is 2022. We thought that was kind of the year to do it, right?
Can't wait.
Yeah.
Can't wait to see you down there in Dunedin, Joe.
All right, boys.
Can't wait to see you tonight for game one of the American League Championship Series on Sportsnet.